Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Now, Colin Brophy, the Minister of State for Migration, is here. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You're here to tell us about these plans to begin charging people who live in emergency accommodation. So what is the plan?
Well, it's something that I have wanted since I became Minister to make part of how we handle people in and going through international protection. Currently, at this moment in time, if you are, after 5 months, still in international protection, you have the right to apply for work. And after 6 months, you have the right to work. So what we have is we have a cohort of people who are working, paying their taxes, etc., absolutely legitimately working away. And what I believe is that a fair system should be that they would make a contribution towards the cost incurred in providing the accommodation to them as they go through the international protection system. That we have yet to fully determine. We want to have a fair contribution system. So we're not going to put a system in place that's designed to be punitive in any way. We're not going to put a subsidised system. What we're going to look at is putting in place a cost-based system that's fair to the people who are paying it, and obviously it helps with the overall objective, which is a key objective of myself and Minister O'Callaghan, which is to bring down the cost of providing the international protection service to the state. Mm-hmm. Last year, that cost was 1.2 billion. Yeah. That is far too excessive.
But this isn't going to get you very far on that. I mean, I was looking at figures that were quoted over the summer. If you're earning €97 a week, you'll contribute a very small amount, around €15, yeah, up to a maximum of 238. It'll be a drop in the ocean.
Yeah, those are suggested figures that came out from an early draft. We haven't yet finalised it. The actual cost of this is not going to make a vast difference to running IPAS. That primarily will be dealt with by our change from commercial providers to state-owned accommodation, mm-hmm, which we saw with City West, and we'll be continuing to do so, where there are actually millions and tens and hundreds of millions over a number of years of savings which can be achieved. And obviously the main way in which you bring down the cost of international protection is to bring down the numbers coming, and that is something we want to see.
So that's what this is about. It's a deterrent, is it?
Well, no, it's not just a deterrent. It's based on fairness. I look at everything in relation to how we operate the system around migration as trying to have the fairest possible system. And if someone is out there at the moment listening to us and they're working away and they're paying their taxes and they're going and they're paying their landlord, whatever their rent is for that month, then I don't see in any way, shape or form why we shouldn't have a situation where if someone is going through international protection, they're working away, paying their taxes, doing their job, that they shouldn't also be, mm-hmm, making a contribution to the cost of their accommodation.
I just wonder though, if you are in asylum seeker accommodation, why would you work now if you're going to have to hand over a portion of that money?
Well, I think it's important to recognise that, and this is something that's type of, sometimes I deliberately think is almost misrepresented. Most people who are in international protection and have the option to work, want to work. They want to work for the very obvious reasons that you and me want to work, which is that it keeps you busy, it's doing something, it's contributing, and it's giving you a sense of value.
But you see my point on the welfare trap.
Yes, but I don't think it is a welfare trap, because people have opportunities when they're legally entitled to work, and after 6 months you are legally entitled to work. So we believe that most people will still want to work. I mean, it's a sense of worth, it's a sense of fulfilment to be actually out there working, and most people want to do that. And I think, to be fair to people who are going through international protection, they will be accepting of the fact that there's nothing wrong with asking for a contribution towards the cost of the accommodation, mm-hmm, being provided.
And what's your view? You say the numbers have yet to be worked out, but do you think people who are working part-time should contribute, or just people who are working full-time?
Well, I'm just conscious always of the fact that I don't want to prejudge the outcome of discussions on this. I think that if you have a income, and that's a reasonable income and it's a taxable income, that you should be making a fair contribution towards the cost of accommodation. The exact details on those figures, okay, we'll work out closer to the launch.
Well, people who are in the IPAS system, they also get 38.80, I think it is, a week. Will that go as well?
And again, no. At the moment, what I'm looking for is a contribution towards accommodation.
That's You'd still get
thing.
The 38.80.
And you were looking at preserving what we have at the moment, but having that contribution to accommodation. And as I say, this has actually gone to the party leaders for consideration at this moment in time. We're waiting for that to come back, and we'll be moving it forward. And at the time, mm-hmm, when we're doing that, I'll be making the detailed announcement of the very specifics involved, okay, in what we'll be proposing.
If it's a drop in the ocean, and I think you've conceded that point when it comes to the cost of IPAS.
I wouldn't call it a drop in the ocean, but what I would call it is it's about fairness. It's about the idea.
Right. I'm just, because I'm wondering what problem it solves.
Well, what it actually does, I think, is address the principle and I keep on coming back to this, of fairness within the system, which is that if somebody is working and they're in receipt of pay for working, they're paying their tax, which we obviously want people to be doing when they're working, then it's only fair that if the person next to them on the production line or in the facility where they are or doing whatever job they're doing is also paying for their accommodation, that they would contribute to cost. I don't think there's anything unfair about
that. So it's sending a signal, really.
It's sending a clear message that fairness should be there because currently at this moment in time, what you have is a situation that somebody could be earning hundreds and hundreds of euros per week, working away side by side with someone who's having to pay their rent and actually not having to make any contribution. And I don't think that's a fair system.
And how many people do you think are in IPASS who are working? There's 33,000 or thereabouts in the IPASS accommodation system at the moment. About 9,000 of those are children. How many are working?
Well, there is a situation where a majority of adults who are there over the 6 month period are entitled to be there and to work. So it is actually quite a few thousand people who are in that situation. And obviously some aren't working. There are people who are vulnerable. There are people who have disabilities. There are people who, for various reasons, can't find full-time employment. But when people have reached the six-month process, most people apply for permission to work. Can I just take the point, though, of pointing out that one of the longer-term solutions that we want in relation to this is we want to reach a point through the Migration Pact, which we're bringing in next year, where we will take the average time which people will spend in IPAS down to 12 weeks.
So where are they going to go then?
They will have a decision one way or the other. They will have a decision that says you're either legally entitled to remain in the country and we've accepted your application, or you will be deported and you must leave. Because we believe
there thousands of people in IPAS who have the right to stay now but have nowhere to go? So what problem does it solve if you speed it up?
Can I point out there are thousands of people in IPAS who should be leaving? And I actually very clear on this. I believe that if you have reached a decision in IPAS and that you have been given the right to remain in the country, that you should actually move on and leave IPAS.
To where?
If most of those people will be in a situation where I'm sure they're in working, they're in employment, and they should, like everybody else, be looking to get an interview. It comes down to this.
I'm sure most of them would want to get out of IPAS from what we hear about
and
it. There's nowhere for them to go.
But thousands are. They're actually leaving every single year, thousands of them. And it's very important that if we want to build a system around migration in this country, and recognising the fact that the vast, vast majority of people who've come here to live and work in our country, who are not originally Irish born, are actually coming here on work visas and working. So once you have an entitlement to work, and once you've been given that and it's been adjudicated, say, through an IPAS process, you should be looking for, if no other reason than to integrate into communities and help the process of integration, to be actually living in your own accommodation.
But if you're going to ask people to contribute to the cost of their accommodation, you've got to make sure that accommodation is up to standard. We know that in the first half of this year, 12 of those centres were closed. That's a far higher number than were closed in 2024. Do you think that there has to be a correlation here between standards and the fact that you're asking people to pay?
I want all our IPAS centres to operate to the highest standards. It's actually something I've done since becoming Minister, is to do a range of visits to a number of IPAS centres to actually look at what we're providing. If we have IPAS centres which are not up to standard, we shouldn't be continuing with them. And I think it is vitally important that we provide proper and right accommodation to people going through the process. And part of what we're doing in terms of Minister O'Callaghan and myself in reforming the process, in bringing down the overall application process to a 12-week process, we've actually had a 40% reduction in the numbers actually coming in since this government started. And that's a welcome decline, which we must continue to see, is to make sure that we can provide good quality accommodation. And a key to that for us, because it not only saves the state money, but allows for a firm, fair and effective system to be implemented, is to switch to a state-owned and managed model of providing accommodation.
But you've only really made progress on that when it comes to City West.
We have started the process with City West, but we're also looking at everything from modular units. We're also looking at other venues. And what we believe is that we want to see a substantial switchover to that state-owned service.
But it's very hard to get an answer. And I tried this with the last government as well, and I never got an answer. Where will those centres be?
Well, what we will do, and we're quite clear about this, is we have a process where we put out and ask for tenders for people. Think we will evaluate and we will look. We will make sure that we have a proper engagement process and consultation process, but also we'll make sure that we have a proper spread around the country of those centres. Mm-hmm. But what we actually need...
But there's a nervousness, isn't there, around saying where those centres will be?
I don't think it's a nervousness so much as the fact that, and I've seen this firsthand since I became a minister, one of the problems with the policy that was with commercial properties is that long before something is even going to happen, or actually in quite a lot of instances, nothing's going to happen, a rumour starts, it spreads throughout your community, communities get genuine concerns, fears and worries, and it's very difficult to address them because in some instances, the reason you can't address them is because there's no even proposal. This is just literally something that has been started as a rumour. Somebody hears that a property is for sale. It ends up becoming a rumour. There's no proposal at all there. So rather than have a continuation of that process, which I don't think is effective, I want proper community engagement and in as many instances as we can, a switch where we close down commercial providers and move to state-owned accommodation.
You've mentioned the cost of that, $1.2 billion a year. It's extraordinary. And some of the companies who are running those contracts are making huge profits. Would you not tax them? Should there not be a surcharge on those profits? Would that not be a more sensible way to claw back some money here?
Well, what I believe... I believe the first primary way of clawing back the money is, one, reduce the number of people coming into the country claiming international protection. Secondly, to move to state-owned accommodation as a means of saving the state vast sums of money. To disengage from commercial contracts where we can, where those contracts end, and to make sure that if we have to renew commercial contracts, we renew them at a rate which is much more beneficial to the actual state and delivers value for money. And I think those are four key absolute drivers which will, I believe, over a period of time transform the cost of providing international protection. Okay. But at the end of the day, the key thing is to bring down the numbers of people arriving and make sure that we keep those numbers down and have the state-owned accommodation when they arrive.
Okay. Minister, we'll leave it there. Minister of State Colm Brophy. And if you have a view on this plan, do get in touch with us. 51551 is the number for your text messages. Coming up next, though, from setting controls to teaching privacy, how to manage your child's first mobile phone.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.